Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Just the two of us so far.
I'm sure John Robert will be coming.
Yeah, there
You
he
saw
is.
the message from Marco, though. He can't make it.
No, I did not.
Yeah, he's got problems with his mother and he has to take care of her.
There you
Here I am.
are. Good morning, John Robert.
Morning, Andrea. Good afternoon, TJ. Are
Yeah,
you
yeah,
afternoon?
yeah. This thing is recording, but Marco's not coming on, so I don't. Do either of you know how to turn off the recording and start it again?
I'm going to run to the bathroom.
I don't.
No, we have to take host from Marco, and I think there's no way to do it without him. So it'll just have the inconsequential stuff on the beginning. We'll stay there.
Maybe he'll take it off. I don't know if anybody does any editing of these things or not.
No, it's tricky to do the editing, but
Yeah, that's right. We don't have a leader, do we? What's it called? A host. We don't have a host.
No.
Marco's not going to be here today.
Well, he said he would try, but he didn't think he would. So,
Okay.
I guess somebody needs to announce it anyway. We're reading Savitri. Welcome to our reading of Savitri. We're in, oh, I need help with this. Is it book three we're in?
Book four.
Oh, book four, canto
Yeah.
two. Book four, what's the book called?
The Book of Birth and Quest.
Canto two, The Growth of the Flame. And we'll read Andrea, John Robert, then me in order. And I'll start with a 3 minute meditation.
Book four, the Book of Birth and Quest, Canto two, the Growth of the Flame. A land of mountains and wide sun-beat plains and giant rivers pacing to vast seas. A field of creation and spiritual hush, silence swallowing life's acts into the deeps of thought's transcendent climb and heavenward leap. A brooding world of reverie and trance, filled with the mightiest works of God and man, where nature seemed a dream of the divine, and beauty and grace and grandeur had their home, harbored the childhood of the incarnate flame. Over her watched millennial influences, and the deep godheads of a grandiose past looked on her and saw the future's godheads come, as if this magnet drew their powers unseen. Earth's brooding wisdom spoke to her still breast, mounting from mind's last peaks to mate with God's, making Earth's brilliant thoughts a springing board to dive into the cosmic vastnesses, the knowledge of the thinker. And the seer saw the unseen and thought the unthinkable, opened the enormous doors of the unknown, rent man's horizons into infinity. The shoreless sweep was lent to the mortal acts, and art and beauty sprang from the human depths. Nature and soul vied in nobility. Ethics, the human keyed to imitate heaven. The harmony of a rich culture's tones refined the sense and magnified its reach to hear the unheard and glimpse the invisible and taught the soul to soar beyond things known, inspiring life to greaten and break its bounds, aspiring to the immortal's unseen world.
Grieving Earth's safety, daring wings of mind bore her above the trodden fields of thought, crossing the mystic seas of the beyond to live on eagle heights near to the sun. There, wisdom sits on her eternal throne. All her life's turns led her to symbol doors, admitting to secret powers that were her kin. Adept of truth, initiate of bliss, a mystic acolyte trained in nature's school, aware of the marvel of created things, she laid the secrecies of her heart's deep muse upon the altar of the wonderful. Her hours were a ritual in a timeless vein. Her acts became gestures of sacrifice. Invested with the rhythm of higher spheres, the word was used as a hieratic means for the release of the imprisoned spirit into communion with its comrade gods. Or it helped to beat out new expressive forms of that which labors in the heart of life. Some immemorial soul in men and things, seeker of the unknown and the unborn, carrying a light from the ineffable to rend the veil of the last mysteries. Intense philosophies pointed Earth to heaven, or on foundations broad as cosmic space, upraised the earth mind to superhuman heights. Overpassing lines that please the outward eyes, but hide the sight of that which lives within, sculpture and painting, concentrated sense upon an inner vision's motionless urge, revealed a figure of the invisible, unveiled all nature's meaning in a form, or caught into a body, the divine.
The architecture of the infinite discovered here, its inward musing shapes captured into wide breaths of soaring stone. Music brought down celestial yearnings. Song held the merged heart absorbed in rapturous depths, linking the human with the cosmic cry. The world interpreting movements of the dance molded idea and mood to a rhythmic sway and posture. Crafts, minute in subtle lines, eternalized a swift moment's memory or showed in a carving's sweep, a cup's design, the underlying patterns of the unseen. Poems in largeness cast like moving worlds and meters surging with the ocean's voice, translated by grandeurs locked in nature's heart, but thrown now into a crowded glory of speech, the beauty and sublimity of her forms, the passion of her moments and her moods, lifting the human word nearer to the gods. Man's eyes could look into the inner realms. His scrutiny discovered numbers law and organized the motion of the stars, mapped out the visible fashionings of the world, questioned the process of his thoughts, or made a theorized diagram of mind and life. These things she took in as her nature's food, but these alone could fill not her wide self, a human seeking limited by its gains. To her, they seemed the great and early steps, hazardous of a young discovering spirit which saw not yet by its own native light. It tapped the universe with testing knocks or stretched to find truth mind's dividing rod. There was a growing out to numberless sides, but not the widest seeing of the soul, not yet the vast, direct, immediate touch, nor yet the art and wisdom of the gods.
A boundless knowledge greater than man's thought, a happiness too high for heart and sense, locked in the world a yearning and yearning for release. She felt in her, waiting as yet for form, it asked for objects around which to grow, and nature strong to bear without recoil the splendor of her native royalty, her greatness and her sweetness and her bliss, her might to possess and her vast power to love. Earth made a stepping stone to conquer heaven. The soul saw beyond heaven's limiting boundaries, met a great light from the unknowable, and dreamed of a transcendent action sphere. Aware of the universal self in all, she turned to living hearts and human forms, her soul's reflections, complements, counterparts, the close outlying portions of her being, divided from her by walls of body and mind, yet to her spirit bound by ties divine. Overcoming invisible hedge and masked defense and the loneliness that separates soul from soul, she wished to make all one immense embrace, that she might house in it all living things, raised into a splendid point of seeing light out of division's dense, inconscient cleft, and make them one with God and world and her. Only a few responded to her call. Still fewer felt the screened divinity and strove to mate its godhead with their own, approaching with some kinship to her heights. Uplifted towards luminous secrecies, or conscious of some splendor hidden above they leapt to find her in a moment's flash, glimpsing a light in a celestial vast, but could not keep the vision and the power, and fell back to life's dull, ordinary tone.
A mind daring heavenly experiment, growing towards some largeness they felt near, testing the unknown's bound with eager touch. They still were prisoned by their human grain. They could not keep up with her tireless step, too small and eager for her large-paced will, too narrow to look with the unborn infinite's gaze. Their nature weary grew of things too great. For even the close partners of her thoughts, who could have walked the nearest to her ray, worshipped the power and light they felt in her, but could not match the measure of her soul. A friend, and yet too great wholly to know, she walked in their front towards a greater light, their leader and queen over their hearts and souls, one close to their bosoms, yet divine and far. Admiring and amazed, they saw her stride, attempting with a godlike rush and leap, heights for their human stature too remote, or with a slow, great, many-sided toil, pushing towards aims they hardly could conceive. Yet forced to be the satellites of her sun, they moved unable to forego her light. Desiring, they clutched at her with outstretched hands or followed stumbling in the paths she made. Or longing with their self of life and flesh, they clung to her for heart's nourishment and support. The rest they could not see in visible light. Vaguely, they bore her inner mightiness. Or bound by the senses and the longing heart, adoring with a turbid human love, they could not grasp the mighty spirit she was, or change by closeness to be even as she.
Some felt her with their souls and thrilled with her. A greatness felt near yet beyond mind's grasp. To see her was a summons to adore. To be near her drew a high communion's force. So men worship a God too great to know, too high, too vast to wear a limiting shape. They feel a presence and obey a might, adore a love whose rapture invades their breasts. To a divine ardor quickening the heart's beats, a law they follow, greatening heart and life. Open to the breath is a new diviner air. Open to man is a freer, happier world. He sees high steps climbing to self and light. Her divine parts, the soul's allegiance called. It saw, it felt, it knew the deity. Her will was puissant in their nature's act. Her heart's inexhaustible sweetness lured their hearts, a being they loved whose bounds exceeded theirs. Her measure they could not reach, but bore her touch. Answering with the flower's answer to the sun, they gave themselves to her and asked no more. One greater than themselves, too wide for their ken, their minds could not understand or wholly know. Their lives replied to hers, moved at her words. They felt a godhead and obeyed a call, answered to her lead and did her work in the world. Their lives, their natures moved, compelled by hers, as if the truth of their own larger selves put on an aspect of divinity to exalt them to a pitch beyond their earth. They felt a larger future meet their walk. She held their hands. She chose for them their paths. They were moved by her towards great unknown things. Faith drew them, and a joy to feel themselves hers. They lived in her. They saw the world with her eyes. Some turned to her against their nature's bent, divided between wonder and revolt. Drawn by her charm and mastered by her will, possessed by her, her striving to possess, impatient subjects, their tied, longing hearts, hugging the bounds close of which they most complained, murmured at a yoke they would have wept to lose, the splendid yoke of her beauty and her love. Others pursued her with life's blind desires, and claiming all of her as their lonely own, hastened to engross her sweetness meant for all.
As earth claims light for its lone separate need, demanding her for their soul jealous clasp, they asked from her movements bounded like their own, and to their smallness craved a like response. Or they repined that she surpassed their grip and hoped to bind her close with longing's cords. Or finding her touch desired too strong to bear, they blamed her for a tyranny they loved, shrank into themselves as from too bright a sun, yet hankered for the splendor they refused. Angrily enamored of her sweet, passionate ray, the weakness of their earth could hardly bear. They longed, but cried out at the touch desired, inapt to meet divinity so close, intolerant of a force they could not house. Some, drawn unwillingly by her divine sway, endured it like a sweet but alien spell. Unable to mount to levels too sublime, they yearned to draw her down to their own earth. Or forced to center round her their passionate lives, they hoped to bind to their hearts human needs, her glory and grace that had enslaved their souls. Here's a break. Shall we take a little moment?
Sure. So they're talking about all the, her, all the people that she encounters, and but it seems a kind of slightly lonely situation to me when I read it.
It is.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
It is, because nobody can really meet her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't help but read this entirely about the description of the mother in her younger life. She was married twice before she got to Sri Aurobindo. So she had, you know, she had people around her, and it's just very interesting to read.
There was a word I didn't know, Fane, F-A-N-E.
I don't know it either. Yes.
Temple.
Temple.
Ah.
Oh, wow. Fane. Never guessed that.
Oh, there it is. In a timeless temple? What a strange word.
Fane. I think I've heard it before, but.
Wonder where that comes from. It doesn't have any resonance with anything that I know. Do you know, John Robert?
No, I don't know the origin of it.
It says it's Latin. Thanum. Cloth or banner.
Oh, that makes more sense. Huh. Interesting.
My dictionary says a temple or shrine. So shrine implies to me something smaller and maybe something more natural.
Right. But the interesting with the what you said, Jeffrey, the connection with cloth,
yeah,
with something woven.
Yeah. I mean, mine also says temple, but etymologically, it comes from the cloth.
Uh-huh. Say the words again that you said before. The words that they have.
Hang on. Flag or banner?
Banner.
Possibly cognate with Latin panis, piece of cloth.
Uh-huh.
And the Gothic fana, also piece of cloth. So so it's a relationship between flags or banners and religious.
Yeah. Shall I read a little more?
Yep, let's keep going.
But mid this world, these hearts that answered her call, none could stand up her equal and her mate. In vain she stooped to equal them with her heights, too pure that air was for small souls to breathe. These comrade selves to raise to her own wide breaths, her heart desired, and fill with her own power that the diviner force might enter life, a breath of Godhead, greaten human time.
Although she leaned down to their littleness, covering their lives with her strong, passionate hands, and knew by sympathy their needs and wants, and dived in the shallow wave depths of their lives and met and shared their heartbeats of grief and joy and bent to heal their sorrow and their pride, lavishing the might that was hers on her lone peak to lift to it their aspirations' cry. And though she drew their souls into her vast and surrounded with the silence of her deeps, and held as the great mother holds her home, only her earthly surface bore their charge and mixed its fire with their mortality. Her greater self lived soul unclaimed within. Oftener in dumb nature's stir and peace, a nearness she could feel serenely won. The force in her drew Earth's subhuman broods. And to her spirit's large and free delight, she joined the ardent-hued, magnificent lives of animal and bird and flower and tree. They answered to her with the simple heart. In man, a dim, disturbing somewhat lives. It knows, but turns away from divine light, preferring the dark ignorance of the fall. Among the many who came drawn to her, nowhere she found her partner of high tasks, the comrade of her soul, her other self, who was made with her, like God and nature, one. Some near approached, were touched, caught fire, and failed. Too great was her demand, too pure her force. thus lighting earth around her like a sun, yet in her inmost sky, an orb aloof. A distance severed her from those most close. Puissant, apart, her soul as the gods live.
As yet unlinked with the broad human scene, in a small circle of young eager hearts, her being's early school enclosed domain, apprentice in the business of earth life, she schooled her heavenly strain to bear its touch, content in her little garden of the gods as blooms a flower in an unvisited place. Earth nursed, unconscious still, the inhabiting flame. Yet something deeply stirred and dimly new. There was a movement and a passionate call, a rainbow dream, a hope of golden change. Some secret wing of expectation beat, a growing sense of something new and rare and beautiful stole across the heart of time. Then a faint whisper of her touched the soil, breathing like a hidden need, the soul divines. The eye of the great world discovered her, and wonder lifted up its bardic voice, a key to a light still kept in being's cave, the sun word of an ancient mystery's sense. Her name ran murmuring on the lips of men, exalted and sweet like an inspired verse struck from the epic lyre of rumor's winds, or sung like a chanted thought by the poet Fame. But like a sacred symbol's was that cult, admired, unsought, intangible to the grasp, her beauty and flaming strength were seen afar, like lightning playing with the fallen day, a glory unapproachably divine. No equal heart came close to join her heart. No transient earthly love assailed her calm. No hero passion had the strength to seize. No eyes demanded her replying eyes. A power within her awed the imperfect flesh. The self-protecting genius of our clay divined the goddess in the woman's shape and drew back from a touch beyond its kind, the earth nature bound in sense life's narrow make.
The hearts of men are amorous of clay kin, and bear not spirits lone and high, who bring fire intimations from the deathless plains, too vast for souls not born to mate with heaven. Whoever is too great must lonely live. Adored, he walks in mighty solitude. Vain is his labor to create his kind. His only comrade is the strength within. Thus was it for a while with Savitri. All worshipped marvelingly, none dared to claim. Her mind sat high, pouring its golden beams. Her heart was a crowded temple of delight. A single lamp lit in perfection's house. A bright, pure image in a priestless shrine. Midst those encircling lives, her spirit dwelt, apart in herself until her hour of fate. End of Canto 2. such a powerful prologue to her finally finding Satyavan.
It's relatively short. Shall we reread it today, I guess?
I'm interested. Yeah, we could reread it. That's our pattern. But I'd be happy to just go on to the next one.
I was thinking we could go on to the next one and then reread both when Marco's back next week would be.
So that that's a good idea.
Excluded, right?
Great idea. This next one is so powerful.
Yeah, I really like this next one.
Yeah.
It's funny, this canto that we just read is not one of my favorite ones. Almost everyone I say, well, this is one of my favorite ones. This one isn't.
Well, it's kind of an intermediate one. Yeah, it's kind of a spacer almost, right?
Well, it seems kind of sacrilegious to say that about Savitri, because
this
canto by itself, if there was nothing else of Savitri, would be such glorious poetry.
But, yeah.
But it sits in the middle of all this other.
Right, we are kind of put on hold. Just like she was put on hold, actually, you know?
And the next one is quite short, though.
Okay, well, we could start that one.
Mm-hmm.
Canto 3, The Call to the Quest. A morn that seemed a new creation's front, bringing a greater sunlight, happier skies, came burdened with a beauty moved and strange out of the changeless origin of things. An ancient longing struck again new roots. The air drank deep of unfulfilled desire. The high trees trembled with a wandering wind like souls that quiver at the approach of joy. And in a bosom of green secrecy, forever of its one love note untired, a lyric coil cried among the leaves. Away from the terrestrial murmur turned, where transient calls and answers mix their flood, King Ashwapati listened through the ray to other sounds than meet the sense-formed ear. On a subtle interspace which rings our life, unlocked where the inner spirit's trance closed doors. The inaudible strain in nature could be caught. Across this cyclic tramp of eager lives, across the deep urgency of present cares, Earth's wordless hymn to the ineffable arose from the silent heart of the cosmic void. He heard the voice repressed of unborn powers murmuring behind the luminous bars of time. Again, the mighty yearning raised its flame that asks a perfect life on earth for men and prays for certainty in the uncertain mind and shadowless bliss for suffering human hearts and truth embodied in an ignorant world, and Godhead divinizing mortal forms.
A word that leapt from some far sky of thought, admitted by the cowled receiving scribe, traversed the echoing passages of his brain and left its stamp on the recording cells. Oh, force compelled, fate-driven earthborn race, oh, petty adventurers in an infinite world and prisoners of a dwarf humanity, how long will you tread the circling tracks of mind around your little self and petty things? But not for a changeless littleness were you meant, not for a vain repetition were you built. Out of the immortal substance you were made, your actions can be swift, revealing steps, your life a changeful mold for growing gods. A seer, a strong creator is within. The immaculate grandeur broods upon your days. Almighty powers are shut in nature's cells. A greater destiny waits you on your front. This transient earthly being, if he wills, can fit his act to a transcendent scheme. He who now stares at the world with ignorant eyes, hardly from the inconscient night aroused, that look at images and not at truth, can feel those orbs with an immortal sight. Yet shall the Godhead grow within your hearts. You shall awake into the spirit's air and feel the breaking walls of mortal mind and hear the message which left life's heart dumb, and look through nature with sun-gazing lids and blow your conch shells at the eternal's gate. Authors of Earth's high change, to you it is given to cross the dangerous spaces of the soul and touch the mighty mother stark awake and meet the omnipotent in this house of flesh and make of life the million-bodied one. The earth you tread is a border screened from heaven. The life you lead conceals the light you are.
Immortal powers sweep flaming past your doors. Far off upon your tops, the god chant sounds, while to exceed yourselves, thoughts' trumpets call, heard by a few, but fewer dare aspire, the nympholepts of the ecstasy and the blaze. An epic of hope and failure breaks Earth's heart. Her force and will exceed her form and fate. A goddess in a net of transience caught, self-bound in the pastures of death, she dreams of life. Self-racked with the pains of hell, aspires to joy, and builds to hope her altars of despair, knows that one high step might enfranchise all, and suffering looks for greatness in her sons. But dim in human hearts the ascending fire, the invisible grandeur sits unworshipped there. Man sees the highest in a limiting form, or looks upon a person, hears a name. He turns for little gains to ignorant powers, or kindles his altar lights to a demon face. He loves the ignorance fathering his pain. A spell is laid upon his glorious strength. He has lost the inner voice that led his thoughts, and masking the oracular tripod seat, a specious idol fills the marble shrine. The great illusion wraps him in its veils. The soul's deep intimations come in vain. In vain is the unending line of seers, The sages ponder in unsubstantial light. The poets lend their voice to outward dreams. A homeless fire inspires the prophet's tongues. Heaven's flaming lights descend and back return. The luminous eye approaches and retires. Eternity speaks, none understands its word. Fate is unwilling and the abyss denies. The inconscient's mindless waters block all. Block all done. And is that a full stop? I have a strange.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Only a little lifted is mind's screen. The wise who know see but one half of truth. The strong climb hardly to a low peaked height. The hearts that yearn are given 1 hour to love. His tale half told falters the secret bard. The gods are still too few in mortal forms. The voice withdrew into its hidden skies, but like a shining answer from the gods, approached through sunbright spaces, savitri, advancing amid tall heaven pillaring trees, appareled in her flickering colored robe, she seemed burning towards the eternal realms, a bright moved torch of incense and of flame that from the sky roofed temple soil of earth, a pilgrim hand lifts in an invisible shrine. There came the gift of a revealing hour. He saw through depths that reinterpret all, limited not now by the dull body's eyes, new found through an arch of clear discovery, this intimation of the world's delight, this wonder of the divine artist's make, carved like a nectar cup for thirsty gods, this breathing scripture of the eternal's joy, this net of sweetness woven of aureate fire. Transformed, the delicate image face became a deeper nature's self-revealing sign. A gold leaf palimpsest of sacred births, a grave world symbol chiseled out of life. Her brow, a copy of clear, unstained heavens, was meditation's pedestal and defense. The very room and smile of musing space, its brooding line, infinity's symbol curve. Amid her tresses, cloudy multitude, her long eyes shadowed as by wings of night under that moon gold forehead's dreaming breath, were seas of love and thought that held the world. Marveling at life and earth, they saw truths far.
A deathless meaning filled her mortal limbs. As in a golden vase's poignant line, they seemed to carry the rhythmic sob of bliss, of earth's mute adoration towards heaven. Released in beauty's cry of living form toward the perfection of eternal things. Transparent grown, the ephemeral living dress bared the expressive deity to his view. Escaped from surface sight and mortal sense, the seizing harmony of its shapes became this strange, significant icon of a power renewing its inscrutable descent into a human figure of its works that stood out in life's bold, abrupt relief on the soil of the evolving universe, a godhead sculptured on a wall of thought, mirrored in the flowing hours and dimly shrined in matter as in a cathedral cave. Annulled were there the transient values of the mind. The body's sense renounced its earthly look. Immortal met immortal in their gaze, awaked from the closed spell of daily use that hides soul truth with the outward form's disguise. He saw through the familiar cherished limbs the great and unknown spirit born his child, an impromptu from the deeper sight within. Thoughts rose in him that knew not their own scope. Then to those large and brooding depths whence love regarded him across the straits of mind, he spoke in sentences from the unseen heights. For the hidden prompters of our speech sometimes can use the formulas of a moment's mood to weigh unconscious lips with words from fate. A casual passing phrase can change our life.
O Spirit, traveler of eternity, who camest from the immortal spaces here, armed for the splendid hazard of thy life, to set thy conquering foot on chance and time, the moon shut in her halo dreams like thee. A mighty presence still defends thy frame. Perhaps the heavens guard thee for some great soul. Thy fate, thy work are kept somewhere afar. Thy spirit came not down a star alone. O living inscription of the beauty of love, mistled in aureate virginity, what message of heavenly strength and bliss in thee is written with the eternal's sun-white script? One shall discover and greaten with it his life. One shall discover and greaten with it his life to whom thou loosenst thy heart's jeweled strings. O rubies of silence, lips from which there stole low laughter, music of tranquility, star lustrous eyes awake in sweet large night, and limbs like fine linked poems made of gold, stanza to glimmering curves by artist gods, depart where love and destiny call your charm. Venture through the deep world to find thy mate. For somewhere on the longing breast of earth, thy unknown lover waits for thee, the unknown. Thy soul has strength and needs no other guide than one who burns within thy bosom's powers. There shall draw near to meet thy approaching steps the second self for whom thy nature asks, he who shall walk until thy body's end, a close-bound traveler, pacing with thy pace, the lyrist of thy soul's most intimate chords, who shall give voice to what in thee is mute. Then shall you grow like vibrant kindred harps, one in the beats of difference and delight, responsive in divine and equal strains, discovering new notes of the eternal theme. One force shall be your mover and your guide. One light shall be around you and within. Hand in strong hand, confront heaven's question, life. Challenge the ordeal of the immense disguise.
Ascend from nature to divinity's heights. Face the high gods, crowned with felicity. Then meet a greater God, thyself beyond time. This word was seed of all the thing to be. A hand from some greatness opened her heart's locked doors and showed the work for which her strength was born. As when the mantra sinks in yoga's ear, its message enters, stirring the blind brain and keeps in the dim, ignorant cells its sound. The hearer understands a form of words, and musing on the index thought it holds, he strives to read it with the laboring mind, but finds bright hints, not the embodied truth. Then, falling silent in himself to know, he meets the deeper listening of his soul. The word repeats itself in rhythmic strains. Thought, vision, feeling, sense, the body's self, are seized unutterably, and he endures an ecstasy and an immortal change. He feels a wideness and becomes a power. All knowledge rushes on him like a sea. Transmuted by the white spiritual ray, he walks in naked heavens of joy and calm, sees the God face, and hears transcendent speech. An equal greatness in her life was sown. Accustomed scenes were now an ended play. Moving in muse amid familiar powers, touched by new magnitudes and fiery signs, she turned to vastnesses not yet her own. Allured, her heart throbbed to unknown sweetnesses. The secrets of an unseen world were close.
The morn went up into a smiling sky, cast from its sapphire pinnacle of trance, day sank into the burning gold of eve. The moon floated, a luminous waif, through heaven and sank below the oblivious edge of dream. Night lit the watchfires of eternity. Then all went back into mind's secret cave. A darkness stooping on the heaven bird's wings, sealed in her senses from external sight, and opened the stupendous depths of sleep. While the pale dawn slipped through night's shadowy guard, vainly the newborn light desired her face. The palace woke to its own emptiness. The sovereign of its daily joys was far. Her moonbeam feet tinged not the lucent floors. The beauty and divinity were gone. Delight had fled to search the spacious world. End of Canto 3.
So I'm always curious here that it seems he skips over her actual leaving.
Like, yeah, I was trying to figure that out. All of a sudden,
suddenly she's gone.
Yeah.
She hears his voice, and by the next evening, she's acted on it. She's acted on what came up in her as a result of it.
This line, top of page 374, mistled in aureate virginity. So I looked up mistled. It isn't a word. It isn't a word in English. It's an Aurobindo word. So the only references to the word are sites that talk about Aurobindo. I unless it's a word that nobody knows about, but.
Well, it refers clearly to me to a missal, you know, the scripture, and it is a living inscription of the beauty of love. This would be an amazing line, missal in aureate virginity.
So he's taken a noun and turned it into a verb.
That's what he's done, I guess. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Creating a living sacred text. Which so is here, what...
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Here's what Rand Hicks says, the Savishi Dictionary. He says, illuminated as in a prayer book for mass. So the missal is a book.
Yeah.
Growing
up Catholic, everybody has a missal.
Right.
That has the text of the mass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they used to. I don't think they do that anymore. But there was a book that had all of the.
Yeah, it had everything in Latin with the English, with the whatever language you were in. For me, with the Dutch on the other side. Mm-hmm. So that's how I learned Latin.
So that's interesting because I took it the way, I think the way you took it, Andrea, which is a missal, something that was sent.
Oh.
Because
no.
Well, you didn't take it that way?
No, I associated it with the missal that I'm familiar with the book.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I was taking it to mean like a missal, something that's shot or sent. Missal in here, missal sent here in Aureate Virginity, but with the power of a missal.
Of a missal, that makes sense.
But I think the other one makes better sense because he talks about the illumination, you know, like some of the medieval illumined books,
right?
The Book of Kells and
I agree. Yeah.
But there's also something that penetrates her consciousness. It seems. Where the missal.
A living inscription of beauty of love, missal in or what? Message of heavenly strength and bliss in me is written. So it's like this is part of Ashwapati's speech to her. Huh?
Yes.
So yeah. Well, I don't think it's spelled the right way for the missal that I'm thinking about. I think that's spelled differently.
No, it's not spelled the same way. also, at page 375. This message enters the stirring blind brain and keeps in the dim ignorant cells its sound. So there's a lot of, there's a number of references to brain and cells in the previous canto as well that we read earlier, where he talks about the brain and the cells. So it's like a extended metaphor that he's using through these sections.
Well, I think the whole thing about Sri Aurobindo's work is to bring it into the body, to bring the spiritual truth and reality and vibration, energy, manifestation into the body.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is he's drawing consciously on what the sort of scientific argument about how perception works through the brain and the cells and things like that. Right. So.
Right. And I love how he describes that, you know, I'm sure all of us have had the experience of hearing either a mantra or a Tibetan bell that keeps reverberating in your cells, even when it is no longer actually there, it seems, but it seems to continue inside. Yeah.
I think these, when Sri Aurobindo calls on this voice that speaks, O force compelled, fate-driven, earth-born race. He sort of voices in his poetry the inner voice. I always find that really powerful.
Yeah, it reminds me of Milton, Milton also does that thing where you have a separate voice inside the text,
So what I'm just seeing and understanding or beginning to understand is when Ashwapati's quote ends, then meet a greater God, thyself beyond time. The next description, even though it still refers to he, is there. The he seems more like a general thing, what can happen to a being, but that really describes what's happening to her after she hears that. Because then it ends with an equal greatness in her life was sown. So these words from her father are opening the awareness to the existence of someone for her.
Well, he, in the right shortly after the quote ends, he mm-hmm. gives this long analogy as yes. when the mantra sinks in yoga's ear. And I think that's when he uses the masculine or the generic. I don't know if it's really masculine. He uses the word he,
yeah.
but it's generic.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I remember as a little boy in grammar school, some teacher talking about the pronouns. You know, pronouns are a really big deal now, the gender of pronouns, and saying that he and him in certain contexts didn't mean male. It meant it was a generic, it was a common, meant everyone. And yeah. I think Sri Aurobindo is still using that kind of language a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another kind of small comment. Each of those quotes ends in an unusual way. It's like, so the first quote ends with his tail half, so top of page 372, his tail half told, falters the secret bard, the gods are still too few in mortal forms. It's kind of like a minor note, you know, it's not a major, it's like a minor note. And then when you get to the end of the other quote, the next one with Ashwapati, then meet a great, so top of page 375, then meet a greater God thyself beyond time. Also a minor note in a way. Well, maybe that's more major, but it just feels a slightly, anyway, it's like when, if I'm going to make a proclamation, I'm going to finish it with a flourish. But these don't finish on a flourish in the same way.
Well, the second last line, then meet a greater God, that feels like, there you go.
Face the high gods, crowned with felicity, then meet a greater God, thyself beyond time.
Okay, that does feel like it.
But I agree with you, the previous one, the previous quote, the gods are still too, it's like a rebuke. Whereas the inner voice's words end in kind of a rebuke. In fact, it starts with a rebuke. starts, oh, force compelled, fate driven, oh, petty adventures. And then, you know. But but when Ashapati speaks to Savitri, it's like he's taken the rebuke and rebounded from that into what he sees in Savitri. And I think it ends with quite a lot of power there.
Right.
And this, yeah. the next line is, this word was seed of all the thing to be. I don't know, Jeffrey, maybe you were talking about the feeling of the line rather than
the content,
more like the rhythm or the whole ambience of the lines.
Yeah,
thanks, John Robert, for going back to the beginning of that first quote, because that rebuke is only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. And then he says, but not for changeless littleness were you meant. So he gives this little reflection on how little we are. And because she is human and she seems human, to not stay stuck in the little human mind.
Are you talking about the first quote here,
Andrea? Oh, force compelled, yeah, fate-driven.
This is given to Ashapati. These words are given to Ashapati.
Oh, this is not Ashapati speaking?
No, this is a voice inside Ashapati.
Yeah, the second one is Ashapati speaking.
Right. It does, that the first voice does talk about the greater powers, but then he says, you know, later on he says, okay, you've got all this, but nothing's happening. Vain is the unending line of seers. The sages ponder in unsubstantial light. The poets lend their voice to outward dreams, and so on. And so it's not purely a rebuke, I think, is what you're pointing out. But there is a lot of rebuke in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that was what Ashwapati needed in the story, what Ashwapati needed to wake him out of the kind of the daily thing that he had been,
yes,
had gone back into in the course of Savitri growing up. You know, his long traveler of the worlds was past now, and he is back in the world, and, you know, and this voice comes and says, wake up.
Yeah. See who she is. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wakes up, right. And then he's able to wake her up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says somewhere in here that this thing that happens with Ashwapati, where he hears this voice, this can happen periodically to human beings. I don't remember exactly where that line is or those lines are.
It's interesting that the moment the voice stops, the voice withdrew into its hidden skies, but like a shining answer from the gods approached through sun bright spaces, Savitri. So in that moment, he sees her.
Right.
Yeah.
So the voice prepares the renewal of his sight. So he sees who this little girl who he's raised from an infant to a young woman, he sees who she is now and who she will be. Immortal knit immortal in their gaze.
Yeah.
Oh, here's that line I was thinking about. He spoke in sentences. This is at the bottom of page 373. He spoke in sentences from the unseen heights. For the hidden prompters of our speech sometimes can use the formulas of a moment's mood to weigh unconscious lips with words from fate. A casual passing phrase can change our life.
Yeah.
The power of the word when it's aligned with some greater force.
Yeah, that's what happened to me when I was in Amsterdam. And I read a little article about Orville with one single quote by Sri Aurobindo. And it said, all life is yoga. And that was a phrase like that for me. It was like, bells ringing. It was like my universe opened. I didn't know what it meant, but it caught my attention. And within a year, I was in India. Yeah,
I remember that from your story that we published in collaboration. I was wondering if Sri Aurobindo rewrote the growth of the flame many times, like he did some of the cantos in Savitri, because this one that we just read seems like it's just filled with the vastness and the sweep and the royalty of his prophetic voice.
Yeah.
At the top of the very beginning of Canto 3, I don't know if it's just a typo in my thing, but about 10 lines down, a lyric coil. I have two dots like an umlaut on top of the eye.
It's a coil. It's a bird. It's a bird.
Ah.
It's a bird in India that is absolutely amazing. It's a coil.
So it's not a coil here, that's why.
No, it's a coil. It's a bird.
Is that how you say it, coil?
Well, that's how I say it.
I don't remember. I mean, I remember reading about it, but I don't remember hearing somebody say its name when I was
I don't either. But I do remember, and I don't know whether that was the coil, but I know there was a bird that would sing in the night only. So the whole world would be quiet in this darkness. And then there would be this bird just like raising its voice with this amazing flourish. And that's what I always think of when I read about the coil, but I don't know it.
Well, I figure I was going to say that if Sri Aurobindo wrote about it, it was probably in Tamil Nadu, but he lived all over the place, so it could be anywhere, or it could be from some Indian scripture that I don't know about too, I guess.
So are you looking that up, Jeffrey?
No, I'm looking up this brain because I came across the other passage I was looking for. So I'll come back to that one. 375, Brian Brain and keeps in a dim ignorant cell, it sounds. That's what I referred to earlier. But there's another thing just before the first voice, O Force Compelled, the two lines preceding it traversed the echoing passages of his brain and left its stamp on the recording cell. So we have the same image used again and again, right? So.
Yeah, the power of this, of sound.
So the other question you wanted me to look up was, you wanted me to look up the word coil?
The word coil, what it says.
All right, okay.
If you can do it with the umlaut on the I.
And here it says an Indian bird that sings at springtime. And it doesn't include the umlaut. Here's an interesting thing. The next word in this dictionary here, there you are, is koilas, C-O-I-L-A-S. And he says, the paradise and a bird and abode of Shiva and Kubera. It is a great mountain in the Himalayas north of the Manasa Lake. So I don't know if there's a relationship, but the first four letters are the same for both words.
Yeah, Koilas, yeah.
So it seems there's another spelling for koil. So it's sometimes spelled K-O-E-L.
Huh, with a K.
Yeah, it says a member of the cuckoo family, but in Asia. Because the spelling with the double, with the umlaut, again, seems to pick up the Savitri websites as.
Yes, Sri Aurobindo's unique language.
Yeah.
One other thing that struck me at the, toward the beginning of the first voice, when the voice is talking about how long will you tread the circling tracks of mind around your little self and petty things. Mm-hmm. And he says, but not for a changeless littleness were you meant. And he talks about how your actions can be swift revealing steps. It's like he talks about the possibilities that are already in humanity for great change. And I thought, this was speaking to us now.
Mm-hmm.
When great change is needed, almighty powers are shut in nature's self. A greater destiny waits you in your front. This transient earthly being, if he wills, can fit his acts to a transcendent scheme.
Yeah.
I have this dream about collaboration. That collaboration could be a vehicle for this voice, or for this, for the word of today that will do what Sri Aurobindo was talking about here, or one of the words of today. You shall awake into the spirit's air and feel the breaking walls of mortal mind and hear the message with which left life's heart dumb and look through nature with sun-gazing lids and blow your conch shells at the eternal's gate. To you it is given to cross the dangerous spaces of the soul and touch the mighty mother stark awake and meet the omnipotent in this house of flesh and make of life the million-bodied one.
So that line, and touch the mighty mother stark awake, is like, that is what we need to do in ourselves, right? To somehow evoke that presence in us. And that's how she wakes up. It's like we are the awakening of the earth.
And that's what Ashwapati did in what he said when he saw Savitri in this canto.
Right.
He woke her up, the mighty mother stark awake. And he saw the omnipotent in her house of flesh. Yeah, this is one of my favorite cantos.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the next page, 371 in the middle, how he turns for little gains to ignorant powers, or kindles his altar lights to a demon face. Mm-hmm. He loves the ignorance fathering his pain. A spell is laid upon his glorious strength. He has lost the inner voice that led his thoughts. And masking the auricular tripod seat, a specious idol fills the marble shrine. The great illusion wraps him in its veils. That is such a line. Oh my God.
So shall we stop there today, and we'll read those both sections when Mark goes back with us.
Absolutely perfect.
Are you good for a meditation to finish up with?
Mm-hmm. Please. May these cantos continue to resonate in ourselves. So we meet next time.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.